Horus Heresy, Thief of Revelations, by Graham McNeil. Directed by Christian Dunn. Performed by Gareth Armstrong, Martin Ellis, Jonathan Keeble, and Toby Longworth. Of all the truths Azek Araman had learned as a scholar of the Corvidae, this was the most galling. The understanding that real knowledge came from knowing the extent of his own ignorance. He had believed that he understood the mysteries of the great ocean and its myriad complexities, but events on Prospero had shown him that his every certitude poured through his fingers like wind-blown dust. Araman's Tower, a spiraling horn of white stone raised on the edge of a geomantically volatile plateau, was a thing of beauty. The glittering ruins of Tisca had been transplanted to this world of warp-charged rock, but Araman could not bring himself to reoccupy his former chambers. That time of his life was over, and Araman had chosen to wield the power that this world offered to craft a new domain for himself. A devil's bargain, perhaps, but one that might see the Thousand Suns elevated to their former glory and vindicate their actions in the eyes of the fools who condemned them. The Book of Magnus, his Primarch's last gift to him, lay open on a lectern of glass and silver, its heavy pages rustling with a life of their own. Precious little else remained of the accumulated knowledge contained within Prospero's burned libraries, but what he had saved was stacked in one endless shelf that spiraled from the base of the tower to its topmost spire. It was here, at the summit, that Araman worked. Held immobile by coruscating chains of light, a bound figure was spread in a cruciform pattern. The body had once been that of a legionary, a perfect representation of all that humanity could achieve, a paladin of enlightenment, but now, little better than a monster. His name had once been Astonel, and he had been a brother of the Pyrae Fellowship until the flesh change had taken him. He hung a meter from the reflective floor, and fire crawled across his skin. Phosphor-bright traceries limned his veins, where etheric energy oozed through translucent flesh. Demonic coals burned in sunken eye sockets, and his lips were stretched in the rictus grin of a burning reaper. The mouth moved, but no sounds emerged from Astonel's throat. Only furnace-hot blasts of superheated air. Concentric circles enclosed the transformed legionary, wards that had been used by the practicers of the Thousand Suns for centuries when releasing their subtle bodies into the ether. By such means were the denizens of the great ocean kept at bay, and by such means could a creature of the abyss be contained. 9 circles of lunar caustic were described around Astonel, 6 of which had already burned away, the argent gleam of each ring slowly fading until it was black and inert. The luster of the 7th ring was already dying. Araman had learned much from the bodies of the flesh change that he had captured, marrying his own visionary talents to the biotransformative empathy of Hathor Mark. Together, they had examined the hybrid architecture of 45 of their former brothers, each time learning something more of the mutations racking the Legion's warriors. Araman circled the seething fire creature that Astonel had become, letting his senses push through to the raging cauldron of energy within. Astonel's voice echoed in his head.
Again, Azek. Why do you persist in this foolishness?
Araman made no attempts to justify what he was doing. This warrior was already lost. Those who benefited from his labors would hear any justifications, and by then it would not matter how he had affected their salvation. If Araman felt any hubris at such presumption, it did not show.
You are doomed to fail, Azek. You know that, of course. Shall I tell you why?
You are going to tell me anyway, so why bother asking?
Astonel's burning grin spread wider.
You will fail because you think a flesh change is to be feared. You think it's a curse, but you can't see it for the boon it is.
Araman let his Corvidae's sight penetrate the outer layers of the warrior's burning flesh.
A boon? Is it a boon to have all that you once were stripped away? To stand on the precipice of enlightenment only to be dashed down to mutant ignorance? These kings are boons. No. You were once glorious, but now you are a monster.
A monster! The flesh change has shown me that there are few monsters who warrant the fear we have of them. You dread what I and others like me are becoming, but everyone carries around their own monsters. Especially you, Azek.
Ahriman knew that Astonu's every word was calculated to slip through the cracks in his psyche, and the best barbs were those that came loaded with the truth. He forced Astonu's words from his mind and traced the myriad paths into the future that follow the degeneration of Astonu's flesh. While the fiery creature remonstrated and taunted him, he watched a thousand iterations of Astonu's hyper-evolution. In some, the fire eventually consumed him. In others, it waxed and waned, but in none of them did it reverse. Without intervention, Astonu's body would only ever devolve further into its warped state. Ahriman pulled his power back into himself, feeling the cold of the lunar caustic in his bones as he withdrew into his own mind. His armor felt heavy upon his frame, every plate of ivory-trimmed ceramite shimmering in reflected flame light. He should have killed Astonu a long time ago, but the things he was learning were enabling him to understand the progress of the flesh change. And what could be understood could be mastered. Such was the suddenness and violence of Astonu's change that Ahriman had discovered him with relative ease. The Thousand Suns chief librarian's consciousness lay across this planet like a web, and a warrior's degeneration plucked at its threads like nothing else.
You can't stop it, Azek. It will come to us all. In time, it will come to you. The ninefold gift is already in you. I see it already.
Anger touched Ahriman, and he stepped closer to the edge of the circle as the gleaming light at his feet diminished.
The flesh change will not take me, Astonu. I will not let it.
Whoever said it was up to you?
Too late. Ahriman realized that the last of the wards around Astonu had burned down to black. The fire creature hurled itself at him, the shimmering veins of its body flaring with retina-burning brightness. Fiery claws gouged at his plastron. Ahriman swatted Astonu aside with a hurried kind blow, but his former brother sprang to his feet like a cat, his body wreathed in a rippling corona of white flames. The air blurred with heat haze, and a wordless babble of unsyllables dripped from Astonu's lips like curses. Ahriman's senses flickered into the immediate future, and he swayed aside as Astonu leapt across the chamber. Flames sprang up in his wake, each after-image of his presence imprinting its shrieking echo onto the world. Ahriman extended his arm and summoned his Hecker staff to his hand. He swung it like a broadsword, a curved crook catching Astonu in his midriff and doubling him up. Ghostly flames rippled along the length of the staff, but Ahriman snuffed them out with a thought. Astonu lunged again, and a burst of flaming breath went ahead of him. Before it struck Ahriman, a glittering sphere of freezing air surrounded Astonu. He screamed as his fires were extinguished and the light burning in his veins dimmed to the faintest glow. Held immobile by an orb of purest chill, Astonu raged impotently in his barbarous demonic tongue. Ahriman felt restless ambition in his biology that spoke of powerful biomancy.
A creature of fire, and you don't think to use the Pavoni arts against it? You're forgetting how to use your powers, brother.
Ahriman turned to see Hathor Mard with his hands extended before him, a frost-white radiance blazing at his fingertips. Sobek and Amon stood behind him, their auras alight with channeled power. While his subtle body had been within the protective circle, he had not sensed their approach. The venerable Amon approached the hissing, defiant form of Astonu, studying the warrior's disfigured physiology with an expression of horror.
Astonu. Astonu. What has become of you?
What will become of us all if we fail?
Amon nodded, accepting Ahriman's words, but unwilling to say so.
Not to sound petulant, but there's only so long I can hold this cryosphere. So hurry up and kill him!
Armin drew his power back into himself, rising into the enumerations to focus his thoughts. He nodded to Hathor Mard, who dropped his hands. Astonu flew at them, but he was halted mid-leap as Sobek trapped him in a kine web. Ahriman's will was a physical thing, an extension of his force and strength, multiplied many times over. It took hold of Astonu and broke him in two. A hideous crack of splitting bone filled the chamber, and the firelight in Astonu's body faded like a snuff. His etheric aura dispersed like wind-blown smoke, and a sliver of Ahriman's heart turned to stone at the loss of another of the Thousand Sons. Hathor Mard saw his anguish.
Don't waste your sorrow on degenerates like him.
Ahriman rounded on the Pavoni, angrily.
The man of knowledge must be able not only to love his enemies, but also to hate his friends.
Ammon turned the dead body's head from side to side, as though he might see something to explain its degeneration just by looking at it. Sobek knelt and ran a finger through the powdered lines of lunar caustic.
You take too many risks delving into the flesh of the changed ones.
I risk more by not delving.
And did you learn anything of use from him?
Ahriman hesitated before answering.
I now see how the corruption spreads.
But not how to reverse it.
No, not yet.
We should take this to the Crimson King.
You know we cannot.
Why? Tell me. He stopped this once before. He can do it again.
He did nothing but postpone our degeneration. In his arrogance, he thought he had mastered what the powers of the great ocean started.
And you think we can stop it? Now who's being arrogant?
You have been away from the Legion too long, Ammon. Your wanderings take you to the farthest corners of the world. But what have you learned? Nothing.
Ammon stepped close to him.
Then I have learned as much as you, Azek.
Sobek was quick to step between Ammon and Ahriman.
The Primarch could help.
Ahriman shook his head and flipped the Book of Magnus to a page of half-completed formulae and esoteric calculations.
We have been down this road before, brothers. When the rubric is ready, we will bring it to our father. If he should learn of the great work while it is incomplete and untested, he will stop it.
Hathor Mard touched the yellowed pages of the Book of Magnus as though it were a holy relic.
You presume he cares enough to stop it? When was the last time any of us saw Magnus or felt his presence abroad in the world?
Their silence spurred Mard to loquaciousness, never a difficult task, and his features subtly shifted to assume a more stately look.
Magnus broods alone in the Obsidian Tower. Who knows what thoughts fill his head? Certainly not the fate of his few remaining sons.
You presume too much, Hathor Mard.
Once the equerry of the Primarch, Ammon was always first to rise to his defense when words became heated.
Do I? Then what do you suggest we do? Meekly await what the tides of the warp decree for us? Damn that! And damn you!
Hathor Mard strode to where Astonu's twisted corpse lay. The nobility and awesome majesty it had once possessed, now ruined and corrupted.
This will not be me! And if I have to go against the Primarch's wishes, then so be it.
Ammon's cheeks flushed with color, and his aura shifted into the higher enumerations of combat. Sobek amplified his Corviday powers to project futures of broken bones, burned flesh, and their own ruination into each warrior's aura.
Enough!
Ammon and Sobek flinched at images of their own deaths. Both adepts earthed their power, and the dissipating energies flared from the psychoconductive spire of the tower in a burst of etheric fire. Ahriman stepped to the chamber's center.
We are embarked on this course, and our purpose is set. And to forget one's purpose is the commonest form of stupidity.
And to repeat the same thing over and over again and expect different results is the very definition of insanity.
Then what do you suggest?
You know what I suggest.
Very well. I will speak with the Crimson King.
The Obsidian Tower was well named. A crooked spike of black rock that towered above all else. Its impossible construction had been achieved in moments. A passing fancy of the Crimson King made real. Its substance was angular and glassy, like napped volcanic rock, and striated with darting lights. No windows or openings marred its surface, save those willed into being by the Primarch. At its peak, a pellucid radiance, part illumination, part eater of light. It was impossible to look upon it and not feel the gaze of the Crimson King. An all-seeing, all-knowing presence that left no shadows in which to hide secrets. Ahriman kept his gaze averted. On a world saturated with warp energy, it was a matter of supreme ease to travel from one place to the next in the blink of an eye, yet Ahriman still chose to travel via Thunderhawk. Like everything on this world, the aircraft had not escaped the transformative energies of their new home. Its structure had become altogether more avian in plan, more raptor-like in profile. The power in its name had wrought a transformation all of its own. Ahriman brought the craft around in a slow turn, circling the tower for a place to put it down. Vivid electrical storms raged like the after-images of titanic battles in the heavens, and the jagged peaks on every horizon were limned with electrical fire that spat traceries of lightning into the sky. Sentient zephyrs chased the Thunderhawk, scraps of febrile consciousness that flocked to men of power like acolytes to a high priest. Millions of them attended upon Magnus's tower, like the accretion rings of planets, or blood sharks with the scent of prey in the water. Ahriman angled the Thunderhawk around as an opening shaped itself in the upper reaches of the spire, and a shelf of glassy rock extruded from its substance. He feathered the engines and raised the craft's hooked nose as he brought it down with a gentle pressure of thought. He allowed the engines a moment to cool before making his way to the assault ramp and descending to the tower. As always, he felt the charge in the air, the sense of potentiality that existed in every moment. Here, breath had power, and his was seized upon by the invisible zephyrs that flocked to him. Ahriman ignored them and strode into the tower through an elliptical archway with edges that curved like a dancing flame. The space within was enormous, too vast to exist within the circumference of the tower, and lit in the soft glow of a librarium. Spiraling stacks and shelves groaned under the weight of myriad forms of knowledge. Parchments, scrolls, data crystals, hide-bound tomes, sigh songs and haptic memes, each bearing a fragment of priceless knowledge born from the sacking of Prospero. To an outsider, such a collection would appear extensive, a repository of knowledge unmatched by any beyond the great vaults of Terra. But to the Thousand Suns, these were scraps. A fraction of the accumulated wisdom gathered from the corners of the galaxy over the last 2 centuries. It made Ahriman weep to know that such irreplaceable wisdom had been lost for the sake of spite and jealousy.
Was it worth it, Russ?
A voice came from above, resonating with the sorrow of the ages. It was a voice that knew neither surprise nor joy, and was all the sadder for having once basked in such wonder.
Don't speak his name.
Father.
Why do you disturb me?
Ahriman could see no sign of his gene sire. The voice emanated from everywhere and nowhere. A disembodied spirit that could have been whispering in his ear or shouting from deep inside the librarium.
I wish to ask you something.
You did not need to travel to the Obsidian Tower for that.
No. But some things are best spoken of face to face. Father to son.
There was a pause. Then, a sudden swelling of presence. A fundamental change in the secret physics of the world. The librarian vanished. And Ahriman found himself at the very summit of Magnus's tower, raised above it as a god above his domain. The world curved away, as though he were a giant stood upon a globe, and he saw the fiefdoms of the warrior sorcerers who had escaped the final slaughter at the Pyramid of Fotep. From a legion of thousands, these paltry few remained.
We would like to live as we once lived, but history will not permit it.
But a small body of determined warriors, fired by an unquenchable faith in their mission, can alter the course of history.
The Crimson King, he was called. The Red Cyclops. Magnus of the One Eye. All these epithets and more had been heaped upon him. Some in praise, most in fear. The Magnus that towered above Ahriman was clad as he last remembered him, going out to battle the Wolf King in a howling storm of black rain. A blood-red breastplate, sheathed in twin horns of bone and draped in a mantle of amber mail. A kilt of sun-baked leather, edged in gold and stamped with an ivory representation of the Legion's serpentine symbol. His crimson hair was wild, the mane of a visionary or madman. The Primarch's features were bronzed and ruddy, yet beneath it all was a fiery light. The sun at the core of his being, simultaneously filling his fictive body with its radiance and self-creating it. That light shone strongest through his eye, a singular orb of gold, flecked with undreamed colors and hardened by the sorrow of one who rued the day he saw further than he ought. This was Magnus as he wished to appear. A demigod wrought in the image of a lost past by the memories and emotions of his favored son. Magnus was a being on the cusp of some great transformation, but where that would take him was a mystery to which not even he could know the answer. Ahriman fought the urge to drop to his knees. Since coming to the planet of the sorcerers, Magnus had demanded that none of his sons bend the knee to him, but some habits died hard. Contrary to outward appearances, the top of Magnus's tower was open to the elements, and the kaleidoscopic storms raging overhead were close enough to touch. Blistering energies of unimaginable power danced overhead, and their potency was an elixir in Ahriman's blood.
It's quite something, isn't it?
The Primarch spoke with the pleasure of a shared secret.
It's incredible.
Magnus walked a slow circuit of the tower, and capricious arcs of lightning slithered around him as though he were a lodestone. Magnus felt Ahriman's stare.
Like attracts like. The power in me is that of the great ocean, distilled through my reborn flesh into something purer, but still chaotic.
In the presence of Magnus, it was impossible not to feel like a helpless student at the feet of an omnipotent master. There was so much Ahriman wanted to ask, but he forced his tumultuous thoughts into the placid enumerations to focus himself.
I have been working on something I think you should see.
Yes, I know. You have been working tirelessly upon the flesh changed of late.
You know.
Magnus turned and gave him a skewed look.
Did you really think I wouldn't?
Ahriman realized he had been naive to believe the Crimson King would be ignorant of his great work, but was still surprised at how transparent he must have been.
This is why you intrude on my labors.
Yes, my lord. I have read everything in the grimoire you entrusted to my care. And there is a spell that I believe will...
Why have you really come here, Azek?
Ahriman walked at the edge of the tower, his cloak flowing around him in the winds from the volcanic plains below. Jagged rocks reared up from the base of the tower like black fangs in the mouth of a predator.
Because I need your help. We cannot do this without you. We have learned much, But we are blind men searching for revelation in all the wrong places.
So you wish my blessing and my help? Well, I do not give it. You are walking a dangerous path, my son. Trust me, I know the nobility that drives you. I felt it myself. But you would think that you had broken the curse of the flesh change only to be deceived by the very power you believed had brought you success.
But surely, together, we could finally find an answer.
No, I cannot help you. Moreover, I will not help you. And you are to cease all efforts in this matter. Do you understand?
Ahriman felt his control of the enumeration slipping as he rose into a higher, combative stance.
No, I do not.
Without seeming to move, Magnus swelled to become a towering giant, a feral beast of blood-matted fur with hardened skin. His single eye became a molten sun that pinned Ahriman in place, a carcass set for the spit.
Your little cabal is no more. And woe betide he who ignores my warning or breaks faith with me. He shall be my enemy, and I will visit such destruction upon him and all his followers that from now until the end of all things, he shall rue the day he turned from my light.
Ahriman recognized the words and the bitterness that dripped from every syllable. Only one question remained to be asked.
Why?
Because matters of greater import occupy my thoughts.
The awful threat and terrible danger faded from Magnus's eye as his physique returned to its former stature.
Matters greater than your legion's end?
Magnus did not answer, and cast his eye to the raging storms of light above him, as though the answer lay within them. His features softened and took on a thoughtful cast.
Much more important.
Tell me, that I might understand why you abandon us.
Magnus nodded, and reached out to place a bronze-skinned hand upon his shoulder. The planet of the sorcerers fell away, like a shining bauble dropped down a darkened well.
I will do better. I will show you.
Ahriman felt a terrible dislocation, like the wrench of a teleport, but 100 times worse. His gen-enhanced frame, bioengineered to resist the extremes of any environment, was suddenly that of a frail mortal, as his subtle body was ripped from his flesh. His body of light soared through the great ocean, borne upon the back of a fiery golden comet, a presence of such power that he dared not look directly upon it. He knew that this was Magnus. But in the trackless wildernesses of the great ocean, it was no longer constrained by any constancy of form. Stars and galaxies spiraled around him, an endless parade of random events that were not random at all. Everything proceeded to the design of fate's architect, a pattern so grand it could only be glimpsed from beyond the farthest extremes of existence. Even then, it was beyond Ahriman's ability to comprehend, its complexities too subtle, and its intrigues too tightly woven to be understood. Sickness built in Ahriman's belly. A bone-deep vertigo and a dizzying sense of falling. He struggled not to cry out. He was nothing to this universe. An insignificant grain amidst a desert of wind-scattered dust formed from the inconsequences of the galaxy. He was not special. He was not anything.
No! I am Arzak Ahriman!
And with that thought, he was whole again. A warrior scholar of the Thousand Suns. He forced his mind into the second enumeration, where bodily concerns were put aside in favor of the pursuit of enlightenment. His body was gone. And in its place was a shimmer of light. A conglomeration of wheels turning within wheels, eyes by the million, and a form as immaculate as it was unknown. This was the purest expression of his being, a creature of light and thought. The voice of Magnus came to him through senses unknown, each word freighted with terrible foreknowledge.
Come, my son. We will be thieves of revelation. See what I see, and tell me I am wrong to think beyond your concerns.
Suddenly, Ahriman did not want to look. Once he looked, nothing would ever be the same. But he could not refuse his Primarch's demand, and the comfort of ignorance was something to be shunned. His shining body flew close to the radiant form of Magnus.
Show me everything.
Everything? No, not that. Never that. But I will show you enough.
Enough for what?
Enough to know that we still have a choice before us. One that will affect how we are remembered by the tides of history.
The stars wheeled around them, streaking by in a blur. They traveled at the speed of thought. And where thought willed them, they arrived in an instant. The sensation was spellbinding. Like gods, they bestrode the galaxy, traveling its length and breadth with each moment. Ahriman had just begun to appreciate the wonder of his Primarch's power when he realized that they had stopped moving. The world revolving around him in the familiar patterns of stars and the elliptical orbits of planets.
Where are we?
This is Swegalza, the carrion world of the Night Haunter. A place of murder and torment, where the screams of the dying are never ending. A place from which my brother wages a campaign of genocide. It is from here that he was sent to fight the First Legion of the Lion.
They spun through the system, past worlds dead and worlds ravaged by conflict, mayhem, and the collateral damage of two legions at war. Ahriman felt his gaze drawn towards the system's edge, where a vicious battle raged in the void, two fleets battering at one another at close range. Intermingled warships engaged in broadside brawls, filling the space between them with high explosive ordnance and crisscrossing lasfire. Wrecks blazed from prow to stern and split apart as their keels broke under intense gravimetric pressures. Ahriman saw thousands of soul lights flickering out of existence, lives lost by the hundreds every second.
This is the death rattle of the Thramas Crusade.
Ahriman spun around the battle, a ghost of light bearing witness to the cold, airless slaughter. The black ships bearing the winged sword were in the ascendant, reaping a dreadful tally among the midnight ships of the Night Lords. But it seemed the Eighth Legion was not seeking a decisive engagement.
For 2 years, they have beaten themselves bloody against one another. But with this battle, the war is over, and my brothers retire to lick their wounds.
Who was the victor?
That remains to be seen. Though the Dark Angels still bear with them the seeds of their own destruction. In such times, can anyone be called the victor?
The heavens blurred again, and this time Ahriman felt resistance to their passage. One by one, the stars went out, snuffed like candles in a novitiate's dormitory, until all was darkness. Beyond the black curtain, Ahriman saw a burning world, cracked and ravaged by fire. Its continental plates had split apart, and an eightfold symbol was burned into its crust. Beyond this was a planet wreathed in a glittering corona of battle, a red world bathed in blood and madness. Ahriman made to fly onwards to see what new insanity was at play, but a gentle psychic pressure from Magnus halted him.
No, my son! To come any closer would see you tainted by the madness that would drag Sanguinius and his angels to their doom.
The Blood Angels destroyed?
Time will tell, for Sanguinius stands at a crossroads. He knows both paths end in blood, but he is stronger than anyone understands. Well, almost anyone. Gilliman knows, but even he does not truly know his brother's wounded heart.
The image of the blood-red planet faded, replaced by the vast gulfs of wilderness space between worlds. emptiness that the human mind was incapable of grasping.
Why are you showing me this?
Because I will not be made a fool of again. Prospero burns because I thought I knew more than anyone else. If we are to choose a course for our legion, I would have it be the right one. And to that end, I travel the stars and time itself to find my brothers, to know with whom they stand.
Ahriman felt the emptiness around him grow ever more claustrophobic, like the walls of a meditation chamber inexorably closing in. What had felt unimaginably huge and spacious a moment ago now felt cramped and constricting.
That is the weight of our decision pressing in on us, Azek. War has come to the galaxy. A war like never before. And soon I will have to choose a side.
Why must you choose a side? We were betrayed by the Emperor, and Horus Lupercal has nothing to offer us.
Think you so? Then let me show you Ultramar.
The glittering form of Magnus flared brightly, dragging Ahriman in his wake as they plummeted through space once more. This time, they traveled to a blue world that withered in the hellstorm of its doomed star. Its cities were flayed by radioactive winds, and those souls not yet below in the subterranean arcologies were already dead.
I know this world. I came here after visiting the Crystal Library on Prandium. This is Kalth.
Ships of war scattered from the doomed planet. The gold and azure of the 13th Legion and the bruised red of the 17th. The Ultramarines' vessels regrouped, while the word-bearers used the chaos of battle's end to scatter into the darkness between the 500 worlds. Even as Ahriman watched, a storm exploded from the planet's surface, like the most terrible eruption on the surface of a star. Invisible to the naked eye, it was a vast outpouring of inchoate energies to those with a link to the ether. It engulfed Kalth, and soon spread beyond its system boundaries. A ruin storm of epic proportions that burned like a voracious forest fire. Uncontrolled, raw, and bleeding-edged, the storm tore through the immaterial realm without direction. A raging barrier of hatred and spite that was impassable to all but the most powerful individuals. The energies expended in its creation beggared belief, and Ahriman found it hard to comprehend that something so devastating could come about naturally. But who, except the Thousand Suns, had the power to summon anything like it?
They burned, Kalth, for Monarchia.
Monarchia? No, Kalth was but a prologue. Lorgar's vision is grander and wider than the death of a single world. And the cold logic of Gilliman's practical is yet to play out in all its majesty and tragedy. Already the pieces are moving, and I sense that this will be the key to everything.
Lorgar dares to assault the 500 worlds. Has he gone mad? Gilliman's army is a legion. Lorgar could never defeat the host of Ultramar.
Glittering amusement passed through the luminosity of Magnus's form.
I will pass your sentiments to my brother when next I see him. After all, history teaches us that there is no such thing as an invincible army. But sometimes, history needs a push.